Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is the podcast that provides insight into what makes a great mobile game, what mobile game designers are thinking about at the moment, and all the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and we have a big trend to discuss in today's episode. I'm really looking forward to it. Our first kind of expert is Sean Mann, who is the CEO and founder of RP1. How's it going, Sean?
Not too bad. And you, John?
Good. Yes. I'm looking forward to this one. I'm going to have to contain my enthusiasm for various parts of it. a big sort of topic today, kind of metaverse. I guess is it already the most hyped thing? I don't know. It kind of feels like it's got to that stage where people are sort of using it as a buzzword for things that I'm not sure they quite know about, and I'm definitely sure that I don't know about. So, Sean, your RP1 is really working on the tech that sort of underpins this sort of stuff. So, do you want to give us a little bit of an introduction first into what the company's doing?
Of course, and thank you for having me here. So, similar to when the internet was built in the 80s, everyone is, you know, I would say the biggest tech companies are trying to create this proverbial metaverse, right? And there's kind of like this race to build kind of whatever this platform or what this is going to look like. And it's going to require, in my opinion, a complete rethink as far as how we enable hundreds of millions of people interacting in the same, kind of a persistent shared digital world. And RP1, you know, I think a decade in the making, you know, it has created a one-of-a-kind technology that will connect everyone on this planet with millions of applications in a persistent shardless environment. And our platform will hopefully bring together all the AR, VR, and gaming applications with true interoperability, making it easier for developers to create amazing experiences in a fraction of the time, and hopefully a lot cheaper without the worry of dealing with like complex network architecture.
Cool. Okay, so we've got a lot to unpick there.
Yeah.
which we can do. I just wonder if to start off, you mentioned shardless there, and I guess probably those of us in the industry sort of have an idea about what that is, although we may not be, again, correct. So do you want to just kind of underpin, what does shardless actually mean and what are the implications of that?
No, definitely. So imagine if we're all in a conference room and there's only 20 people that can be in a conference room. And imagine the 21st person that arrives, they have to do a duplication of that conference room and it starts another experience, a duplicate of that experience. And so the whole premise of shardless, which is extremely important. In fact, actually, Tim Sweeney spoke about this recently at at GamesBeat Metaverse panel. And he basically said, we need to have tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people in a shardless architecture where everyone can interact in different applications. And so the idea of, and I think Dean actually mentioned it the best, imagine if only 100 people could be in a space. And then as soon as the 101st person arrives, they have to duplicate that. It's really not going to create the future of what we think about this metaverse.
I guess the great thing about mobile and the growth of mobile in the last 10 years has been making games accessible. And I guess if you're thinking about a metaverse, sort of one key aspect of it, as you said, Sean, is mass scale. And so mobile kind of fits into that as providing sort of the audience in a way that, I mean, PC console, obviously very big, but not quite sort of global and mass audience in that way. So Sean, I'm just going to note down a few things you said there. I guess kind of sort of we have persistent shardless kind of worlds, and we have AR, VR, gaming, kind of social aspects. You know, is there a good sort of definition of what a metaverse actually is, or is sort of the point of a metaverse that it is somewhat sort of shapeless, and there's some terms that some people use and some terms other people might use, but there isn't really a good term for a metaverse, and that's sort of what a metaverse is, that you can't, it's a bit like jelly, you can't kind of pin it down.
You know what, you bring up a good point, and I think metaverse has turned into kind of this adjective that's being used in all the conversations around the metaverse. And I think because everyone wants to be kind of in the now, it's kind of like I'm building a metaverse, but in reality they're building an application that would reside, I think, in the metaverse. And I think everyone can look up kind of the Wikipedia definition, which I think is a good one. But I think to help really kind of describe, I look at it as three ways. And I think when you wake up, today in the physical world, there's one Earth, right? You know, it's not like there's lots of other places that we go. And I think there's another thing, there's only really one internet, right? There's an internet that has all these websites. And I look at the metaverse as a place that you go through a browser and you just are interconnected to everything digital. And so I think there's really three buckets there. One is the idea of a digital twin of Earth. And the premise that you can actually do things that you can do in the physical world and duplicate that in the digital world. So like going shopping or playing games or even smart cities and autonomous driving, all these different things need to be interconnected in the digital world. The second aspect would be almost like a Ready Player One, you know, building out these fictional worlds that people get to roam around and be a part of, you know, kind of in a gaming experience, but also in a massive social experience. And I think the third one is really just applications in general, right? You know, this whole AR, VR aspect of once you build this digital twin, you're going to have all these different applications that you're going to want to be a part of in the digital world. And that could be gaming. It could be anything that can be unimaginable within this digital space. And so I think the metaverse encompasses all of that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of, I guess in 10 years time, whether we look back and see, whether we would still see Roblox and Fortnite as actually kind of being the first sort of gaming examples of a metaverse, or whether we sort of look back and go, well, they weren't metaverses, they were just big games. It's kind of that sort of interesting sort of thing, isn't it? Let's get a bit into the technicalities of what you do, Sean, at RP1. So you've come up, you know, over a number of years, you've been building like a very kind of specialized kind of infrastructure, really, for sort of. And one of the things it could do would be sort of hosting metaverses. But can you, without going into too much technical detail, but what are you doing that's different? Obviously, we have lots of data centers and lots of big companies that are providing internet infrastructure at the moment. And I think for some people it seems, well, if you want to go bigger, just you know, buy some more servers off Amazon. So, what are you doing that's kind of not just buying more servers off Amazon?
Yeah. I think that's a great question. And I think if you look at just real-time applications in general, which includes, you know, all gaming, kind of VR and Fortnite and the Roblox, it can, you know, you can only handle about 100 to 250 people per server. And also the ability for shardless, I mean, we're only technically with technology that we're aware of, able to put probably upwards of tens of thousands of people in a single shared kind of architecture. And so the idea and the premise of actually realizing a true metaverse was considered kind of decades away. And our tech founder was actually the former head architect of Full Tilt Poker. And he was thinking about how do you put over 100,000 people in a shardless architecture, you know, well over a decade ago. And after he perfected that system, he was able to put over 100,000 people on 1/10 of a single server. And to show you the comparison, imagine PokerStars, they need upwards of, 1,000 computers to do the exact same thing. And so, you know, AWS, obviously, their biggest customer is a real-time application like Fortnite. And so imagine you can run Fortnite on a fraction of the computers. And so I think what's going to do is it's really going to allow us to do two things. One is we're going to be able to do it on a very small server footprint, which I think is really special. And the second thing is it's going to allow us to build this massive shardless architecture where everyone can put their different applications. So I think it's more about the power of shardless applications and shardless users. So you can go in and out of different applications, and that technology hasn't been founded until we created our platform.
And again, with kind of without going into too much detail, you know, what are you doing that's different? I always kind of find it interesting when talking to kind of tech people who are obviously very specialized in their field. But if you're not careful, it sort of boils down to we've just done this magical thing, and you're kind of, well, if you've done the magical thing, how come no one else did the magical thing before you? So I guess kind of, what is the magical thing? Are you designing your own hardware? How are you doing it?
Yeah, great question. I didn't know you wanted to go that deep, but I'm happy to. It's, you know, it's funny. You know, we found, and it's actually really a neat finding, we found that the reason why you can only put 100 to 250 people on a single server actually had nothing to do with the game. And I think people just accepted that as like a proud, you know, like if you grow, and I think you should be very proud. I mean, Roblox uses 20,000 servers to run, you know, a handful of millions of concurrent users. And I think what they've done is absolutely amazing. But I think if you could rethink how we do architecture, what if we could do that on 200 computers? And what we've done was we figured out that what consumes the actual CPU is how do you disseminate that information between client and servers in real time. So as you begin to scale, it actually consumes a tremendous amount of the servers, and that's where you're limited. And so I think if you think of Moore's Law, everyone's waiting for hardware to catch up, but we've actually solved the software issue, making it ultra efficient, allowing upwards of 250,000 people on a single server running real-time applications. And so the idea of that is not only saving the amount of servers that are going to be needed to run these applications, but the cost savings to a developer is going to be massive because, you know, we've spoken to a lot of VR companies and they said, if we scale, we're going to go bankrupt based on the cost it takes to actually manage those games. For us, it's going to be at a fraction of the cost because we need so few servers to actually run those applications. And so I think that's the kind of the tech behind of what we've discovered.
I guess personally, I don't know really where I sit on how sort of gamey metaverses have to be, because I guess we're coming at it from a games industry point of view. I mean, Sean, for you, you're not coming at it from a game kind of sector specific point of view. So you can sort of host anything. How gamey do you think metaverses, you know, should but not should be? You know, how important is games as part of what makes it, what will make a metaverse sort of, I guess, sticky? Games are very good at making things sticky.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You bring up some good subject matter as far as like even defining games, right? And I think if you look at the history of games, you know, you typically, you bought a cartridge, right? And it was more singular with you and kind of whatever you downloaded, not that even downloaded, but whatever you bought. And then now we have downloads, and now you have this interconnectivity of users where you have, you know, gaming boards that kind of unite players against each other and whatnot. I think what we've seen is that I think humans crave that social interaction. And it's funny, you know, I have two children and, you know, they play Fortnite and Roblox. And it's funny, I sometimes walk by and they're not even playing the game, but they're actually socially interacting or having discussions within these environments because they were unable to connect in the real world. And I think what's happening is the creativity around these games are, well, how can we gamify these social interactions? And I think that's kind of what's exciting about thinking about what's possible for the future and not trying to take what we have today and try to force that into what's going on. I mean, if you think about, especially from a mobile game standpoint, you know, our kids and every kid I've seen, in fact, you know, show me a kid that hasn't. I mean, they're addicted to kind of their cell phones. You know, they have the likes in Snapchat and, you know, they have all these different, you know, streaks and whatnot. And they have this compelling aspect to continue to interact digitally with their friends. And I think there's going to be lots of new gaming experiences that will be around social environments. And I think if you look at Rec Room and you look at, you know, VR Chat and all these different games, I think they're unique because they're pioneers. But obviously the hard thing is the same aspect of shard versus shardless, right? You can only have that 10 to 20 user experience. And then the next person that joins, it's like, you can't be a part of this. I mean, the same thing happens in Roblox and Fortnite. You're very limited on the people you can interact and meet with. And I think that's the exciting part about having tech that kind of breaks those chains and allows you to start building vast worlds that you can have a choice of interaction. It's not forcing the interaction, but have the ability to meet new people all around the world.
Do you think, On that basis, you know, that kind of suggests that metaverse is sort of a winner takes all, in the same way, I guess, you know, we have with some, you know, we've seen with social media. I guess there's different social networks, they sort of operate slightly different ways, different kind of geographies, different sort of age ranges. But do we think the future is sort of there's like half a dozen or 100 metaverses out there, and they are more like sort of they're bigger experiences than we currently have, but they're not all encompassing, or does this kind of boil down to there's sort of one or two or three, you know, there's the kind of like the, probably geographically, I suppose that would work. You know, there's going to be one, in the end, is there one metaverse that everything then happens in? Because that seems to be a little bit what you're sort of, I'm reading between your lines, and that seems to be where you would be going.
I think for the benefit of the people and for the users and developers, and not necessarily the large developers, because I think they're all trying to build their walled garden version of a metaverse and kind of forcing them through. Because if you think of Roblox, I think Roblox has done absolutely amazing. And in fact, they've built a community which is beyond special. But I see them as one gaming experience in the metaverse. And I think not everyone would want to be a Roblox user. They may not enjoy the voxel look. They may not enjoy, you know, obviously they have a different demographic as far as kids. And I know they're probably going to invest a lot of money to bridge, you know, larger age groups. But their challenge is going to be they built that community and that experience. But I think what the whole premise of the metaverse is, imagine if there was more than one internet. Right? I mean, I think we're trying to force kind of this same look. And imagine everyone having to build on one website, right? And that's kind of this Roblox or Fortnite or this, you know, and you're stuck kind of building within their world and their fixation as far as what it should be. I think the freedom of the metaverse is allowing anyone to build an experience at that level. Because I think there's billions of people on Earth that may not like Roblox. And there's people that may not want to play just shoot 'em up games like Fortnite. I think you need to enable the technology for everyone to be interconnected. And I think the reason why it's important to do that is imagine, think of all the bad things with the internet. You know, you have to go to a site, you have to create an identity, you have to, you know, every single different website has a different login and a different experience. I think if we could restart, I think people would build tech that would stop that from happening. But it took decades for Googles of the world to really, you know, help, you know, one login and all this. I think with the metaverse, as we're creating it, I think you want that complete interoperability where it's very easy to go in and out of applications. So that if I'm playing Fortnite and someone playing Roblox, I should still be able to have a conversation saying, hey, you got to come over here and play this game. No different than when I'm at a park in the real world and you're playing soccer and I'm over at the drinking fountain. I want you to come over and, you know, hang out with me over in this space. You should have that freedom to do so. And I think everyone's trying to make their world, but I think nothing's going to stop really creating this future internet, because I think the demand for it is really high. And so hopefully we can, you know, help with the tech. We're just bringing one massive component, but we're going to need massive amount of partners to bring their aspects to help really enable this future internet, obviously.
Definitely, I guess, conceptually, that'd be very significant if you, one word you mentioned there, kind of a term, walled gardens. We've spoken a lot about in mobile, and that's it's been interesting. Obviously, walled gardens have been very successful for a lot of mobile developers. We ended up with two app stores, effectively, which are now undergoing some interesting kind of legal challenges. I guess in the mobile game space in particular, we're so focused on Apple and Google, and while there are, you know, there has always been some disquiet about, not so much that those are walled gardens exist, but more about the kind of the margins that you give away to operate there. I mean, do you think mobile is so based around Apple and Google stores? Can you see in the next 10 years us sort of breaking out from that? But it seems to me that the metaverse probably is not going to mobile devices going into a metaverse is not going to be so seamless if we have not just Google or Apple, but any sort of kind of centralized control over that sort of thing. Because that's, you know, if we're talking about people in Roblox talking to people in Fortnite, and at the moment, obviously, Fortnite's not even available on app stores. Is this going to force the mobile industry to have radical change as well?
Yeah, I think so, and I think it's the betterment of all the developers and the users out there. Obviously, Apple's done an amazing job building not only their company but really creating the security and the things that the app store brings. But I think the limitations, and I think if we start looking at the future, think about there's two massive things. One is you're kind of forced through the app store because the user base is there, right? And the second issue is that you have to download a game, right? So you actually have to download a game to actually be able to play it on your mobile phone. I believe the metaverse is going to be very different. I think the metaverse where you're actually going to stream the game in real time based on where you're at in the metaverse. So all these games are going to be in a coordinate system. And so you're actually going to be able to go through a browser where you're not forced through an app store. And so I think the cool thing about the metaverse is you're going to be able to use an RP1 basically browser and be able to interact with any of these applications all in real time without the worry of a download and that interoperability issue that you find within an app store or a singular monolithic iOS system.
Streaming, there's a few sort of streaming mobile kind of game services, but not really anything at scale yet. Can you see that happening?
I think what has been limiting is obviously the internet connectivity. And so I think with 5G, I think you're going to start seeing a lot more cases where you can stream. And I think gaming developers are going to have to look at it differently, because if you think about it, gaming engines are very monolithic, and they're designed to basically compile the game and then you download it. And so we have to start rethinking on how do you deliver these games. And you're going to have to change the way you actually even architect them, way you develop them. And so I think the premise of really streaming mobile games is that what if you can solve the whole network connectivity issue and just allow games developers to focus on the game itself. And the cool thing is you don't need to see or download the entire game. You just need to be streamed what you see at any given moment. So I'll give you a great example. If you look at Fortnite, instead of downloading a massive kind of compiled game, you only need to know what you see at any given moment in that game. So I don't need to know every single avatar. I don't need to know every single weapon. I just need to know the weapons that show up in front of me. I just need to know what's, and I don't even need to know what's on the side of me or behind me, except maybe for sound and whatnot. But as you move around, that information can be fed to you in real time. So I think it's changing the way we think about architecting these games, which is going to enable what you're talking about, kind of this real time persistent aspect on mobile games.
Yeah, certainly can't wait for that. I've been sort of a big fan, in inverted commas, of Google Stadia, but actually you actually using it, if you're not connected directly to a router, it's kind of like, whoa, okay, I'm getting 10 frames a second now of this. But I love sort of the concept of all that sort of stuff and the way you can kind of, you know, share screenshots and then go straight into games and all that. But I think, yeah, it'd be interesting how 5G, hopefully. I guess we've heard that before with new kind of networking technologies. But yeah, it would definitely make things easier, I guess. So you've mentioned, Sean, in some of your previous kind of answers about kind of AR and VR. And I guess those are also technologies that have sort of, sort of been bubbling under. A few years ago, VR was sort of the next big thing and kind of went away a bit, coming back in a little bit. And obviously AR has some interesting applications on mobile. I guess the argument about how important it is to Pokemon Go will leave for another time. But, do you think those are sort of fundamental to what we're thinking about when we talk about metaverse, or are they sort of provide nice additional features, but really are not sort of core to the experience?
Yeah, no, I think AR and VR is going to be huge. And I think AR is going to be bigger first, just because I think that's where, to be able to converge the real world with the digital world, I think is going to open up new ways of interacting. And so I think the premise would be is if you first have to think about how do you build a coordinate system where all of these locations can exist. And I'll give you a great example. Imagine if we want to go to the Louvre in Paris. And if I have some friends that want to go there, we can actually put on a VR headset. And once you actually build a digital twin of the Louvre, kind of this coordinate system, you can actually build a VR experience at that location. But when you actually, let's say you're physically at that museum, you can actually build an AR application that can use the same coordinate system. And so now if I want to find an exhibit like the Mona Lisa, I can use my AR glasses and it'll draw a line to that exhibit in the physical world. And I think it's going to start enabling things, especially even like NFTs. I think a lot of people, you're buying all these NFTs, but where do you use them, right? And so I think with the AR space, imagine walking around, let's say a school environment, and your friends buy these NFTs and they kind of deck themselves out. Well, if I actually lifted my mobile phone or I eventually will have AR glasses, I'll be able to see their NFTs on their bodies. And they'll actually have this convergence is going to happen, which I think, in getting to your point, is going to enable really cool experiences or potentially gamified aspects of how do you have this interaction happen. And again, you're right. It's not just about gaming, because I think this is going to enable a whole lot of other experiences. But I think it's going to take one awesome application to understand these implications and get that adoption. And then it's going to open up a whole green field as far as new ways of building games in this AR VR space.
Now, it does seem to be interesting. Another term you mentioned, digital twins, which is used a lot in this sort of kind of space where you're sort of building a digital version of a kind of real life version city you're building or something like that. But it is interesting that when you can connect those two things together, which you could do with AR, then it sort of, again, conceptually makes more sense than just having here's a physical thing and then we've recreated that in a digital world and they're not really connected. To have the ability to sort of have both of them sort of impacting each other, which AR gives you in the real world, really sort of opens that up.
No, I was just going to say, I can give you an example. So imagine like you have a house, a real house. And at some point, I believe there'll be a digital twin of your own house where you'll actually be able to display NFTs. And when someone comes over your house, you'll be able to give them access to a private map. And you'll actually be able to see all the different things that you want to display. And I think the whole idea of this digital twin, it just opens up the possibilities. Because if you think about it, we're fortunate, to be working in the gaming space. I'm sure a lot of us can travel, but a lot of human beings on this planet are kind of locked to where they're born or their social economic aspect. And the whole premise of this metaverse or this digital twin is it's a great equalizer, in my opinion. It allows lots of people to be able to travel to places that they couldn't do before or experience things that they haven't done. And you don't have to, the cost would be an Oculus headset or, a future headset that exists out there, again, the cell phone, which has really, really bridged these people together. And so I think the whole premise of opening up the different experiences that we can do, no matter where you're at in the world, I think is what's really, truly special about what the metaverse can bring to everyone. And you're right, it's not just about games, but I think the gamification in different areas that we haven't thought about, man, it is endless, I think. It's really going to open up. I think if you're in the gaming space, I think it's an exciting place to be in the next 10, 20 years, obviously.
I've promised not to talk about NFTs and blockchain in this episode because we're going to go on forever otherwise. So I will hold fast to that and save it for another time, hard as it is. So, Sean, how do you see the next sort of, where are we now, 6 months to the end of this year, another year? Is this kind of happening quite soon? Is this kind of 5 years away? How... From terms of what you guys are doing, when are you sort of finished with the tech? Have you got a lot more to do? Is this all sort of, quite a kind of moving kind of deadline, or should we be expecting stuff, you think, kind of quicker?
Yeah, I think, great question. For a team of less than 10 people, it's quite a lot to put on our shoulders. We're trying to attempt, obviously, something that I think companies of, Microsoft and Google and and Epic could obviously handle just with the amount of money and people and time that you need to put towards kind of building this kind of massive internet, not just one application. You know, for us, we have been purely focused on finishing out the tech as far as the platform that enables this shardless environment. We actually have a demo coming out in the next, you know, probably about 2 months, where we're putting 2 million people on less than 33 servers, including audio, in kind of a virtual world. And you'll actually be able to access it through a client on a PC as well, just in the beginning. And the whole premise would be is to really demonstrate more of the technical capabilities of our system. And I think for us, it's how fast we can actually get partners, because it's going to take a village, you know, to kind of build this platform that we're talking about. We're not the graphic experts in the industry. We're not the developers building games. So it's kind of like when you first started the internet, you kind of just enabled kind of the platform where all these websites can sit. And I think all these companies hopefully will converge to want to build on top of it because of what it can enable. We are, you know, feverishly looking for partners and ways to kind of work with the big tech companies to kind of share in their visions, because I know everyone's trying to create something that our tech enables. But I think it depends on how fast we can kind of converge the specialties from all these different companies. And that's going to take an altruistic kind of thought process. You know, I think if we can build what's good for the entire world, and maybe this is just me green, you know, kind of thinking, but I'm hoping that everyone's going to see that this has to happen, and hopefully we'll bring their expertise and kind of build on top of our platform and work with us to make that happen, because we have a unique view on scalability that can enable it on a very small server footprint. And they have all the specialties on building out all these amazing games and graphics and whatnot. So I think hopefully when we can, you know, bring these things together, we can go a lot faster. So I think the demo, you know, in 2 months, we'll share that. And hopefully within a year, we can actually start allowing people to build applications. And I think it will grow from there as quick as the environment wants to.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, one of the sort of key aspects of Metaverse, I hope that will be there is sort of the kind of it's an open sort of ecosystem. I guess that's sort of what we hope it will enable, at least to some degree. And it seems, you're playing into that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think, you know, our big vision, and if you know, if you're to kind of, you know, wish on what could happen sooner than later, we would love to see all the different gaming engines attached to our platform. And so we can share, again, they're designed from a monolithic standpoint, and we can share on what it's going to take to alter their engine to work on the type of scale we're talking about. But I think it should be up to the developers to pick the different gaming engines based on the type of games and the experience and the cool assets that they have. And so you don't want to necessarily stop that competition, because I think that's just going to continue to create amazing tool sets for the developers. And so the more agnostic that we can be, I think, is super important. But it's going to take, obviously, these companies to say, hey, we're okay about being a part of this massive platform, because there's enough to make as far as money and users the same way that they're doing it today. And so that's our hope, obviously.
Excellent. Well, that's been a thoroughly fascinating discussion. I guess the metaverse is something we will be coming back to probably every few months or so, and taking its pulse and seeing if it's how quickly it's kind of coming to life, or if it's maybe having a little sleep for a year or so. Thank you so much, Sean, for your expertise.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me here, John. It's been a good time.
And of course, thank you to you listeners and watchers now, as we're now on YouTube. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Every month we are looking at what's going on in the world of mobile games, and sometimes that's very specific aspects of mobile games. Sometimes that's kind of more broader kind of trends. Mobile games are pretty much everywhere, so we have the ability to do both. Hope you're enjoying it. Please do subscribe through either your podcast channel of choice or via YouTube. And if you're feeling very happy with our content, you should do this week. Please give us a nice review. That's always helpful, isn't it? But thanks so much for listening and watching. And come back next time to see what's going on in the world of the Mobile Game Dev Playbook.